Not so push for time.
Ferrell laughed, and a nervous titter followed from the otherwise quiet crowd.
There's a rule in the marketplace, jockey. A promise ain't worth shit unless it's delivered with euro marks attached.
Mes amis,
said Marzen, edging forwards, intending to stand in front of Max.
You have to respect me, or where is our marketplace?
Oz, barked Ferrell. When did you last trade here, Mars? Too elite for us now, eh? Collectors, not modsmen now, so I heard.
Does that make me disloyal? Have I been disrespectful? Let us pass. My client has no funds.
The hog was slowing. Dawn would be in full cry outside, and the time to tail up was getting short.
It's been lovely talking to you all, said Max, but I really must dash.
Ferrell's eyes lit up like someone had plugged him in. He grabbed Max's shoulder in a painfully strong grip.
You're Halloran, he said. Fugitive, that's why you're down here. Price on your head, right? Looks like a payday just walked in, my friends.
This was going to go south really, really fast. So Max did what he did best. He acted completely without thinking. He slapped Ferrell's hand away and smashed a fist into the blammer's gut. Ferrell staggered back, and Max leapt at him, jabbing an elbow up into his face and bringing them both crashing to the ground. He cracked in another punch as they fell, and the back of Ferrell's head bounced from the bone floor, stunning him. While the crowd in the marketplace assimilated the speed and ferocity of the attack, Max was back on his feet, one foot on Ferrell's throat with enough pressure to choke him. Max scanned the crowd, who were beginning to twitch.
Any one of you moves on me or Marzen, Ferrell stops breathing. Ferrell, move a muscle, and I'll crush your throat. Now, enough of this. I have somewhere to be.
You won't kill him, said a voice from the crowd. You haven't got the guts.
Max pushed a little harder, and Ferrell, his eyes wide and desperate, squawked a protest. He grabbed at Max's leg. Max increased the pressure, and the scrabbling became weaker and more desperate.
Before Ferrell chokes to death, be aware I've just escaped from landfill, said Max, his body feeling like it was rippling with sudden energy. If I am caught, I will be killed. If I escape, I'll probably die anyway. I'm a dead man walking, and I'm really happy to take a few of you along for the ride.
Seeing his cue, Marzen moved in front of Max and the prone Ferrell.
How about you make us a path? I don't think my client's foot can stay so gently on Ferrell's throat for much longer.
Reluctantly, they began to move aside, and Max could see the flesh tunnel just 10 meters away. He kept the pressure on and made a point of staring all around him, noting those who had moved in. Marzen was at the flesh tunnel entrance now, and there was sadness in his face that made Max regret what he had done. But for once, the disappointment wasn't aimed his way.
All I wanted was the safe passage I negotiated, said Marzen. You have all let yourselves down, disrespected the rules of the market. We should talk when I get back, put ourselves right. Come on, Max.
Max moved quickly, taking his foot from Ferrell's throat and striding to the tunnel, feeling their discontent like a weight across his shoulders. They were filling in the space in his wake, and Max sensed Ferrell was back on his feet and risked a glance. He was grey-faced and massaging his throat.
We'll talk more on my return, said Marzen.
I have nothing to say to you, said Ferrell.
Max strode off up the flesh tunnel and back into the stinking, slushy gloom. Marzen hurried to catch up with him and diverted him down a right-hand spoke that began to angle down gently.
I'm sorry, said Max. I think I've made enemies for you.
It'll blow over, said Marzen.
Anyway, Ferrell needs a lesson every now and again, and I have other routes in and out of my place. He was right about one thing. I don't need the marketplace.
Max smiled.
How far is it? Just a couple of turns to Alpha Junction. Good. I'll be fine from there.
Max blew out his cheeks.
It's a different world down here. Can't believe the military let any of it be built.
Ha! They didn't know it was happening to begin with. Those were fun days. It's a bit different now, and we're just about tolerated, but there's still plenty of space they can't close down, because they don't know it exists. Fortunately for you, that includes Alpha Tunnel. They told you where it comes out, right?
Yeah. I was thinking you might want to architect it right into Martha's pen.
I'll get right on it, said Marzen.
He paused mid-stride.
Martha?
My Drake.
Merde.
They passed more unfortunates in drug dens, where Marzen said poorly cut drugs were smoked or injected, further shortening already pitifully brief lives.
So much for the thriving black economy, said Max.
Marzen shrugged.
The weak fail.
You're one big bowl of compassion, aren't you?
It does not pay to care. You of all people know that.
I'm paying right now.
My point exactly. Right, here we are.
Max was somehow expecting Alpha Tunnel to be a grand entrance of some kind, but of course it was just like all the others. There was a rough structure at the junction to stop a collapse or even a regrowth. A heel, as the illicit architects called it. But beyond that, the walls were cauterized like everywhere else, and the floor matting just as full of ichor. It made Max crave fresh air.
Where are we exactly, relative to the behemoth proper?
We are in the starboard flank beneath seepage. Your path takes you round the belly, through the muscle and fat, and down to your exit point. It's tight up there, and you'll have to pick a careful path to your drake across the deck. If you're spotted, you're toast.
Marzen smiled and shook Max's hand.
Good luck, mon ami.
I'll need it. Hey, be careful back there. It's an ugly crowd, and I don't just mean the beards.
Marzen chuckled.
Look to yourself, and if you live, remember, you owe me.
Surely you won't allow me to forget.
Max headed along Alpha Tunnel, seeing the downward slope in the gently moving flesh, and the way it curved in an anti-clockwise direction, following the belly wall. He began to plan before realizing the futility of it, since he knew bugger all about how the flight deck would be when he arrived. It was the key smuggling route for goods coming onto the flight deck, but that's all he knew. Its whereabouts was the most closely guarded secret on the hog. Another reason that, if he survived, he'd be broke for the rest of his life. Chapter 26. I argued that 30 pairs of legs were too few, but unfortunately more would mean losing architectable living space. So we went with the minimum. At least I convinced them to increase tib and fib bone density. Even so, the loss of just 5 pairs would leave a behemoth struggling to move, unless it was entirely unloaded. Professor Helena Markov, ERC Command Log Entries. The quality of the tunnel improved as it spiraled gently down towards the flight deck. The base plating became a more solid rubber matting, and the walls were coated in increasingly large sections by rubberized panelling. It didn't diminish the smell at all, but at least Max could shake the notion that he was paddling in behemoth guts. He made quick progress through the well-lit tunnel and knew he was closing on the flight deck when the sounds of reptiles of all shapes and sizes began to echo up to him. They were bookended by metallic clangs and, more dimly, by orders booming across the cavernous space of the flight deck. He paused for a moment, struck by the normality of all he could hear and feeling a pang of regret that he had to leave it all behind. Max saw the end of the tunnel from 100 meters or so away. It was ringed with lights, the central one of which, above the round, cornered square doorplate, was a solid red.
Wow, said Max, when he reached the door. High security or what?
He studied the screen set on the wall to the left of the doorplate. It was split into 3 sections. The upper panel showed the view directly outside, which was just a bunch of equipment crates, no signs of life. Bottom left were the readings from 4 movement sensors, and even Max could see that there were people near 2 of them, wherever they were positioned. Bottom right was the input panel, which displayed a single command tile marked Open. It was currently crossed through and coloured red.
No prizes for guessing what that means, muttered Max.
He sat on the tunnel floor and waited for the light to go green. He stared at the levels on the two offending movement sensors, willing the people to start moving away. While he waited, he plotted and listened, straining to hear Martha, but getting nothing but a muffled soundtrack of a flight deck bursting with activity. He didn't want to be waiting too long. He was desperate to see Martha again, and he could afford to miss the wonderful chaos of the first missions of the day. Max felt he should be able to feel her now, just on the outer edges of his consciousness, but there was nothing when he pushed his mind out towards her. He wondered if Inferno X was out there, or Annabeth. He'd give anything to be looking into her eyes right now. Max slumped where he sat, trying to control his anticipation and his fear. He brought his hands up in front of his face and turned them over and back to confirm they were actually trembling. So much had changed. So much more would if he escaped. Whatever came next, there was no coming back. The thought brought tears to his eyes, and he shook his head and growled.
Damn it!
He knew that his anxiety should have peaked when the exit light went green, but instead he felt relief from the torture of waiting. He took a deep breath and pushed the screen tile. The door plate slid backwards with the merest hiss, and he moved out into flight deck storage. He heard a minimal beep, and the door slid shut behind him. He turned to see it close.
Wow, he breathed.
He was facing a bone wall, set with air duct grills floor to ceiling, and a large stenciled sign above them saying, No Stowage. He'd just walked through the opening, and he still couldn't see where the seams met the rest of the duct-heavy section of wall. He put his hand to a grill at chest height, and found it had airflow.
Wow!
The beautiful, violent sounds that characterised the flight deck registered the next instant, and he was reminded of his precarious position. He was in the middle of a short corridor, which, the grills excepted, was walled by storage shelving and stacked metal crates. The flight deck storage facilities were open-fronted areas about a third of the way down the deck. There was one either side of the runway. While much space was given over to equipment specific to the flight deck's smooth operation, the zones were also used for temporary storage of anything and everything that came onto the flight deck before onward transport to its final destination, or its smuggling into the flesh tunnels and the Blammer's hands. The din of the flight deck was coming from Max's left, so the pens were all across the deck and up toward flight command. It meant a walk across open space. Tricky, but at least it would be busy. Max needed a hidden spot to assess his chances of making it there unseen. He looked down the aisle. He was at the right end of the storage zone, but he couldn't see without poking his head out, so he walked to the back of the zone and then along the ends of the 20-numbered aisles, glancing down each one before ambling across to the next, appearing very much the ordinary flight deck crewman. With each glance, he gained a snapshot of the flight deck. Every time he did, he felt a pang that he wouldn't be able to stride across it ever again, head held high and proud as he prepared for a mission, or return triumphant from one. There were drakes on the runway, and he yearned to be lining up with Inferno X. This lot with a firestorm.
Don't fall, he whispered.
Looking at Firestorm waiting for the go, a thought struck him, and he hurried to the end of the zone and walked down aisle two, staying in the shadows. He reached the end and let his gaze travel up the deck. It wasn't quite as bad as he feared. Max was about 300 meters from flight command, and more concerned by the possibility of being recognised by a wandering security guard. He could see all the way up to the bulkheads on the right side of the deck, and sure enough, they were guarded. Same with the back stairs and stores lifts. It would be the same on his side. With drakes on the runway, the geckos were watching on warily, stilled by the proximity of predators. For their part, the drakes ignored them completely, standing serene, gazing out at the sun-drenched desert and the heat washing in, warming the chilly interior. The flight command alert tone sounded, and the pre-recorded message began.
Attention, flight deck. Launch imminent. Clear the runway. Lights up in 30 seconds.
Across the flight deck, the orange lights flashed and rotated. Along the flight deck, green arrows lit. Drakes roared, and their pilots moved them to the ready position. The lead Firestorm Drake beat a talon against the bone floor, then charged off. The noise and spectacle were all-consuming, even for those who had seen it 100 times. What Max needed was the cover of another squad. He peered out again and could make out Hammerclaw pilots mustering outside the guarded locker room, watching Firestorm take off. His breath caught in his throat. Annabeth would be among them. He was desperate to let her know he was back and okay for now. For a moment, he considered trying to reach her before she flew. He sighed. One way or another, she'd know soon enough. Max dragged his gaze away from the hammer claws and watched a couple of Firestormers depart, before hurrying back into the depths of the storage area to strip and drag on his suit, storing the scalpel against his thigh. He knew when he did, it would go active, but at least without the chip, they wouldn't know where he was, nor have his ID. With any luck, it'd be dismissed as a rogue signal.
Luck. Right.
Max dragged the hood over his head, zipped up the suit, and was back at the entrance to the deck in time to see the Hammerclaws heading to their pens. Max watched until he counted the last of them leaving the locker room, mouthing a prayer for Annabeth to be safe. He pulled his zip up all the way to his throat.
"I'm coming, Martha," he whispered.
He hesitated a moment, then headed out onto Flight Deck Alpha. Chapter 27. Am I shallow? If you call the link between Jockey and Drake shallow, then yes. If you call the camaraderie of a Drake squad shallow, then yes. If you call choosing to shorten my life to help guarantee my family lives in peace shallow, then yes. Valera Orin, Squadron Leader, Inferno X. Gerhard Müller was normally a man of complete focus and direction. His entire life had been drawn around certainty. Today, he had none. He was conflicted, and it made him intensely uncomfortable. He barely slept, questioning everything he'd done and said since the Halloran incident had blown up, and he still couldn't work out if he'd done all, or indeed any, of the right things. Walking into flight command well before dawn, he'd been more deliberate than ever, checking the schedule had no holes, no possibilities for confusion, and that there was the maximum chance for Halloran to get to his Drake and escape. Not that he thought for a moment Max would succeed, not least because Kirby had ordered a hefty dose of tranquilizers fed down his Drake's feed tube. Martha couldn't be wiped yet, but she was deeply asleep. He wasn't sure he wanted Max to succeed, even in getting as far as Martha's pen. But if he didn't, why had he gone to Inferno X last night and risked his career? Actually, he knew the answer to that. It was so that whether Max made it or not, Valera and her squad wouldn't hate him. He shouldn't have cared about that, but he did, and it made some of Kirby's words ring loud in his head. This time, though, he reckoned he'd called it right. If Max didn't get away, he was Kirby's problem. If he did, well, escaping with Martha was its own death sentence. One way or another, Max was a problem that was going to solve itself. Müller stood at the open gallery windows in his office and scratched at some irritated skin on his arm. He'd just watched the Hammerclaws leave, and there'd been no sign of Halloran. White Heat were due in pouch imminently, and they were the last squadron flying today. Ground forces were already deployed, and Kirby had arranged for the flight deck to be retracted until the squads returned. Halloran didn't have much time.
"Probably overslept again," muttered Müller, and chuckled at his own joke.
It was at the moment that Marie O'Regan led the White Heats out onto the flight deck, but he decided he wanted Max to escape. If he found a way to expose the truth about landfill, which he undoubtedly would if he could, it would be expensive for Müller, but that would be outweighed by seeing Kirby falling flat on his smug, entitled face. It would probably be enough to take him from the race for the next Behemoth command post.
Ah, yes. I knew there was another reason I went to see Inferno X.
The White Heat Drakes were roaring and kicking their pens, the shuddering thumps against the metal echoing around the flight deck. They could feel their pilots when they were suited up. Every filament live and broadcasting stimulus to the Drake mind and nervous system. The pilots were hurrying to their respective pens, their flight crews waiting to open the doors, check their suits and lube levels, and disconnect the data feeds. Muller's gaze wandered further up the flight deck to Martha's pen, with its guard of 12 military police. There were others guarding every entrance to the flight deck, including flight command. It made for an impressive net, but Max had very smart people helping him out, and there were other ways onto Alpha Deck, if you had the right connections. Still, getting into Martha's pen wouldn't be easy. Muller let his gaze wander back down the flight deck, and there he was. Trotting up the deck, dead centre, like he was just a little late to White Heat's party. Muller wondered how long it would be before someone counted the crew and realised he was surplus to requirements. Halloran put a hand to his ear as he ran, then tapped the side of his head and spread his hands. Muller opened his P-palm and tapped up the comm feeds, selecting the open comm. White Heat pilots were looking round to see who the focus of attention was.
"You are still dark, call sign guest. Are you picking me up at all? More hand signals appreciated."
Halloran wobbled a hand, then put a finger to his lips.
"If I understand it, transmission is intermittent and quiet. We have no data feed. Repeat, your suit is dark. You need to get your spare. Signal acknowledgement."
Halloran wobbled his hands again and kept on coming. He was halfway up the White Heat pens now, and with all their doors open and the first Drakes coming out onto the deck, it was a matter of time before the maths didn't add up.
"Come on, Max," whispered Muller. "Make me proud."
There was no open announcement, but just as he'd begun to hope, Muller saw Mips disengaging from entrance guard and begin to move on Max from three directions. Muller wanted to shout a warning, but all he could do was bite his lip and pray Max had some idea what to do. For a few horrible, yawning seconds, Max didn't notice them at all. But then he hesitated, checked behind him, and broke into a sprint. Muller stepped to the front of the gallery, gripped the rail hard, and stared. There were six of them in front of him, and a few more were coming from behind, but he couldn't worry about them. He was in the midst of the White Heat Drake pens, and the edges of the runways were becoming ever more crowded with reptilian predators. Max knew he wouldn't be able to break the ring of Mips, so he ran to his right across the 140-metre-wide deck. The shouts to stop were lost in the bellows of Drakes and the stamping of taloned feet ringing loud on the bone floor. Over the PA, Kirby's voice, he thought it was Kirby's, ordered him to give himself up. The level of noise was rising sharply, and Max had to concentrate on his pursuers, coming in fast, straight down the middle of the runway. They were coming way too quickly down the empty space, and were just 50 metres away. Max needed help, and he never doubted he'd get it. Dead ahead, a Drake with signature aquamarine blue flares running down its neck stuck its head out of a pen. "O'Regan!" He really should ask how she'd got those flares approved. "Come on! Show you can see me!" Max waved his arms and ripped his hood back off his head, hoping they had some notion of what had happened to him. O'Regan saw him. Her Drake ducked her head and moved swiftly towards him, head glancing back and forth, indicating she knew where the Mips were. Max took a deep breath and ran on, trusting their instincts wouldn't let them down. O'Regan's Drake opened her mouth and emitted a battering roar. Max caught the force of her foul breath full in the face, and loved it. It was a warning. Drake's on the runway, clear the deck. O'Regan brought her Drake round. Her head reared up, giving clear passage for Max. 30 metres the other way, her tail slewed around low and fast, making an onerous whoosh. All but one of the Mips saw it coming and scattered backwards or leapt the swinging spiked tail. The other took a glancing blow in mid-calf and was thrown across the deck, tumbling over to lie screaming in pain, one leg at a horribly unnatural angle. Max ran under the Drake's neck and turned left to run up the deck towards the Inferno pens. Ahead of him was a mass of reptilian bodies, mostly broadside to him, all waiting the call to move onto the runway and providing an excellent barrier to his pursuers. He loved White Heat. They were a great squadron. The Mips were regrouping and moving in from his left. Kirby was relaying his position, but his people were more cautious now, the cries of their broken comrades still echoing from the bone arches above. Max slid under one gently lifted tail, hurdled another laid down for him, and broke into the brief space between White Heat and Inferno X-Pens. His pursuers were converging from ahead again now, as well as from the left. It was tight. He made the Inferno pens and became aware of a growing roar from drakes up and down the flight deck, as if they knew he was running for his life, for all their pilots' lives, and were willing him to succeed. It was weird, like running through a freeze frame. Every drake on the runway was looking at him. Every flight deck crew was transfixed. The gallery was packed, as if the best live event ever was going on below them. "Enjoy the fucking show, Kirby," muttered Max. The pens were in back-to-back pairs, with back-to-back tech areas in between. He only had two pairs to pass before reaching Martha, but it looked a tall order. Mips were running down the rank towards him. Others were forming a ring around Martha's pen again, Zapons buzzing greedily. Max ran past the first pair of pens, belonging to Valera and Stepanek. Drakes battered their heads hard against the windows along the Inferno Run, further disconcerting and distracting already nervous military police. Max took his cue and leapt into the tech areas that came next. He dodged through monitoring equipment, feed control stations, and over the feed and power lines that spread like exposed roots across the floor. He hitched over the rail dividing the two techs as Mips came in on his left, knocking the sophisticated kit aside, hollering for him to stop. Using the side door of Roberts's pen, which partnered Martha's, he put a foot on the lock wheel and propelled himself upwards, just getting the tips of his fingers over the edge of the low roof that covered the door, before sloping sharply up to accommodate a drake standing on hind legs in the pen. He was heading for the roof access ladders, which the maintenance teams apparently used only very rarely to fix fans and such like. The Mips were on him now. They didn't bother with words, just cocked their Zapons to strike. Max kicked one in the face and pulled himself up hard, getting an elbow onto the roof. Inside the pen, Roberts's drake was going crazy, talons hammering at the metal and bone walls, sending shivers through the structure. A Zapon whacked his trailing ankle, and he jerked, his muscles contracting, body hinging violently at the waist, as the pulse fled through him. He gripped the rough bone and metal mesh roof desperately, finding some unexpected upward momentum in the wake of the strike, and managed to pull himself up far enough to roll to temporary safety. He twitched on his back for a moment, before hauling himself unsteadily to his feet. Shit! He steadied himself and climbed the ladder up to the pen roof proper, his body barely under his control. He could hear the Mips gathering themselves to climb up after him. The cacophony of drakes was undimmed, but Kirby's voice could still just about be heard over it. Max reached the top and half-trotted, half-shambled across towards Martha's pen. She was silent. Asleep, he assumed. His body still ricocheted with the electric pulse, his head hurt, and his eyes swam. He forced in deep breaths, trying to relax tight muscles. It didn't entirely work. Movement on his left. Mips were at the roofline. It was time to pray for maintenance sloth. He scrambled across to Martha's pen, Kirby's voice booming out again in a lull in the drake tumult. Below him, White Heat began to take off, the beat of wings and the stamping of feet accelerating along the runway with a soundtrack of his life. He craved the open skies, and he was so close. Max reached his goal and stopped, looking down at the damaged ventilation fan. He could see Martha curled up, her form flickering between the slow sweeps of the fan blades. Mips were surrounding him now. "Nowhere to go," said one. "Give it up." Max smiled, feeling his heart beat fast as the last of the Zapon charge dissipated. "Any of you boys and girls want to join me? You're more than welcome." Max raised his right foot and brought it down hard on the hood of the fan. Once, twice, three times. The fan bracket screeched and buckled. The weakest sheared, and the whole unit fell into the pen, bouncing harmlessly from Martha's back. Max didn't pause. He put his arms tight to his sides, feet together, and jumped down after it. The moments before he landed on Martha's flank scales were full of the glorious scent of her, the heat of her pen, the warm red glow of the heater lights, and the strong smell of her waist in the slurry channel. The fall was from no great height, 6 meters and change, and then down onto the slope of her flank. He relaxed as he struck and slid into a slightly untidy heap on the heated floor. Looking up as he rose and brushed himself down, he saw the Mips crowded round the opening.
"Come on down! Join the party!"
"No need, you moron. You're caught. Thanks for the assist."
Max smiled and trailed his hand lovingly along Martha's scales. He wiped at damp eyes and felt whole once again. The pain of his separation from her was gone, and he breathed her in, letting himself dream of the open skies. He moved slowly, enjoying the touch and the edges of warmth in his mind. He paused at the feed lines, staring down at them, seeing them as parasites sucking Martha's life away to the beat of Kirby's warped heart. He bent down and uncoupled them.
"Not any more."
He walked round to her head that was partially tucked into a fold in her left wing. He could feel his suit energizing with the closeness of her. All he needed was one thing. He knelt by her closed eyes.
"Come on, baby, wake up. Time to fly."
The flight deck was quiet. White heat was gone. The rest of them knew that Max and Martha were together. Kirby's voice on the PA and over his personal comm was finally unimpeded by reptilian interference.
"Max," he said, his voice soft and full of regret, "that was one hell of a run. You're one of a kind, I'll give you that. I don't think anyone else could have got as far. But it's done now, okay? Fun's over. White heat is sky high, and the tail closure cycle has begun. There's no way off, Hal X. So come on. Walk out. Come up to Flightcom. And let's put this straight."
"I haven't even started," said Max over the comm.
He stroked the top of Martha's head and felt the merest shiver in response.
"That's it, baby."
"The fact is," continued Kirby,
and Max wasn't at all sure the XO was really speaking to him,
"there has been a series of unfortunate misunderstandings, problems blown out of proportion, but it's nothing that can't be straightened out. We all want you back in the pouch, one of Inferno X. But this isn't the way, Max. We've got to do things right. Step out and talk to us."
Max bit his lip. The bastard was convincing, and he couldn't deny he was tempted. He pulled in a deep cleansing breath and reached out with his mind, searching for Martha's. His whole body warmed. His suit channeled energy around his muscles. Martha's eye flickered and opened, and she regarded him with such knowledge that he gasped.
"There you are, princess."
"What the fuck?"
Kirby's voice over the PA cut off abruptly. It would be magnificent up in Flightcom. Lights and warnings would be triggered, neural activity readouts would be fizzing, physical status monitors would be moving from red to green. Max moved to stand in front of Martha.
"Don't even think about it," Kirby hissed over the suit comm.
"Too late," said Max. "It's all I've dreamed of since you shot me in landfill. Now it's my turn to do whatever the hell I want. Best get your people away from the pen door."
Max could almost see Kirby's writhing fury, and he was certain Flightcom was alive with colourful language. Martha began to push herself up to a sitting position, leaning back on her hind legs and tail and raising her front claws off the ground. She lifted her head gingerly on her glorious long neck, the sedative still live in her system.
"What do you think you're doing, Max?" asked Kirby, the conciliatory tone back again. "There's nothing out there. No food, no water, no drake feed. You're flying out to die."
"Tell me how that's worse than what you planned for us."
Martha's head swam on her neck. She was struggling to hold it up. Her neck shuddered under the strain, but she managed to move it away from her chest pouch.
"Well done, princess."
Max climbed her body and triggered the pouch release. It creaked open jerkily, the effort causing Martha to shift her talons, searching for balance. Max paused before climbing into the pouch, his dry suit buffing uncomfortably against the receptor space.
"Sorry, Martha. Almost there."
Martha released more secretions, helping him slide into the sleeves and settle his back. She rattled phlegm in her throat, and Max reached out with his mind, trying to encourage her, feed her energy. The pouch closed, and he felt the familiar thrill of connection. Every part of her was open to him, and he could sense the sluggishness of her muscles as she fought the sedative.
"Max," said Kirby, "the tail's closing. You can't get out."
"Lucky I don't know how long it takes to complete the cycle." "No, wait, I do, you idiot."
"No one's unlocking the pen, Max," said Kirby. "You can't get out."
Max laughed.
"I'm in a fire drake, dickhead. I don't need someone to let me out. Better get your people clear."
"Stand down, Halloran. That's an order. Leave this behemoth and I'll have you shot down."
"You lost the right to command me when you lied to me. You lost the right to command everyone in Inferno X and every Drake pilot on the hog, sir. 5 seconds.
Max brought Martha's head round to the pen door. He could see Mip sprinting for cover. Martha's vision wasn't pin sharp, but she responded to his suggestions and opened her mouth. Her fuel line swelled, though Max could tell her reserves were depleted. Max imagined a full-spread flame delivered over maximum range. Heat bloomed briefly, and Max's vision filled with fire. Martha's duct spewed flame across the short gap, with enough pressure to carry 70 meters across open sky. Steel and bone mesh and glass were obliterated. The pen door exploded outwards in a hail of sparks and fire. Alarms rang, sprinkler systems kicked in, and safety bulkheads slammed shut, sealing off the flight deck. Max bent his toes and raised one leg minutely. Martha swayed, but then marched out of her pen through fire and melted bone and out onto the evacuated flight deck. They moved ponderously onto the runway. Turning Martha was akin to directing a drunk round corners. He prayed she'd be able to take off.
"Last chance, Halloran," said Kirby.
"Put Muller on."
"What?"
"Put him on."
Max focused hard down the runway, seeing Mateo making its gentle decline, and knowing he still had a couple of minutes to get airborne. Martha was trembling, and held her neck in an S-shape for support.
"You can do it, baby. It's just you and me, same as always."
Martha rumbled her pleasure, and settled towards her ready stance.
"Hal X, flight com."
"Sorry it's come to this, sir."
"Me too, son. You know we'll hunt you down. There's no escape. We'll track you."
"Copy that, Flightcom."
"You can still turn back."
"No, I can't, sir."
"Copy, Hal X."
Max switched off his comm and let his sense of Martha fill him. Her breathing was even but shallow, her pulse raised. He could feel the tremble in her body and sense the sluggish state of her mind. And everyone on the flight deck could see her neck swaying and dipping as she struggled to keep her head steady. He wanted nothing more than to stand her down, but instead he moved his legs forward, bent his body slightly, and suggested speed. Martha barked a muted roar and set off down the runway. She leaned hard over with each pace, rolling uncomfortably from side to side, gathering speed slowly while she fought against falling. Max gave her everything he had, trying to steady her, keep her running in a straight line. But she veered away continually one way or the other, staggering occasionally when she tried to compensate, and she must have looked for all the world like a sandhead after an all-nighter in Gargan's. About halfway down, with the tail cycle cramping his takeoff zone, Max began to entertain the possibility that she might not get airborne. The chevrons and coloured support pillars seemed to amble by. There was no blurring at the periphery of his vision, and there was no energy in her legs.
"It wouldn't look good if we made our escape on foot," said Max. "Wake up, Princess. This isn't one of those running through treacle dreams."
He leaned in with his mind, knowing what he risked but fearing failure to escape more keenly. The potential of the upgrade was huge, and he knew, without having to think or learn, what he could do. He sent her warmth and strength, and sent her visions of the open sky, the sensation of heat on her back, and memories of the joy of them flying free. Martha steadied and drove forwards with renewed vigour. Max kept up the stream of sensory stimuli, mentally visualizing the gauge of his own energy swinging steadily towards zero, like charge draining from a leaking battery. Martha's neck stretched towards the free air. She moved fully into a takeoff position and pounded down the runway. Max felt the press of acceleration. The painted white ground speed zone was underfoot, and beyond it, the takeoff area. It was going to be touch and go. Martha reached the takeoff point and snapped her wings out, angled for maximum lift as Max directed. She dipped sharply down, her claws rattled across the ramp before, with a single powerful beat, she achieved minimum airspeed and flew north under the drooping tail. Max kept Martha low, following the hog's footprints and deep tail. He didn't think Kirby would order a spine cannon or a missile launch, but the lower their profile, the better. Max's heart was thundering away, every nervous, excited beat amplified within the pouch. "Long way to go, Princess," he said breathlessly, "and we need a place to hole up."
Chapter 28. There was so much still unknown, but the program went ahead anyway, imminent invasion being the mother of all expediences. When would we truly learn the effects of mixing alien and reptilian DNA, and, by extension, the mixing with human DNA? Well, when those effects made themselves known, of course. Hardly a basis for coherent science, but there was no alternative. Professor Helena Markov, ERC Command Logs. Muller took off his headset and walked back into his office. Beyond knowing things were about to get extremely difficult, he had little idea how to react. Fortunately, he had Kirby to crystallize his thoughts for him.
"What the fuck was that about?"
Muller laid his headset down on his desk and poured himself a mug of coffee. Finally, he turned to see Kirby. The XO had closed the gallery door, and beyond him, the crowd was dispersing, though few could resist staring into his office.
"Want one?"
"You tell him you're sorry it's come to this and let him go, and you want me to have a cup of coffee?"
Kirby's face was grey, his expression beyond anger and becoming fear, as the consequences of Max's escape settled on him. There was a slight tremble in his hands as they gripped the back of a chair pushed under Muller's meeting table.
"That's because I am sorry," said Muller, knowing his determined calm would enrage Kirby further. "As should you be. This is the mother of all cock-ups, and you're in the flame wash."
"You're loving this, aren't you?"
"As your rival for the next command position, I am delighted to see you self-destruct. As a flight commander who's just lost his best pilot because you let your ambition cloud your judgment, I am disappointed, angry, and profoundly worried about the consequences."
Kirby stared at him, and a faint hope glimmered in his eyes.
"It's convenient for you that Halloran escaped, isn't it? You even told him we'd track him, didn't you? I wonder why."
"You're living in a dream. There is nothing convenient about all the crap that is going to descend in the aftermath of Halloran's escape. I wanted him to change his mind, to realize it was hopeless."
"Bullshit! You warned him! You as good as wished him bon fucking voyage!"
Muller took a sip of his coffee. It was fresh, hot, and the perfect strength. Yarif was the best barista in the fleet. He smelled the aroma and let it calm him before he tried to slap the stupid off Kirby.
"Save your puerile attempts to blame me for Avery and Solomon," he said.
Kirby opened his mouth, but Muller cut him off.
"We're both in serious trouble. Your corner cutting has led us directly here, and I have the misfortune to be the flight commander who let an unauthorized Drake off his flight deck. So thank you for that great scar on my record, And how about we turn our attention to getting him back?
There's nothing to discuss. You're going to turn White Heat around and send them after him. You should have already.
Perhaps I'll put my coffee down and hit you after all.
What?
No one is changing White Heat's mission. It's the sort of mission that helps win wars. Finding Max will only save your arse. We'll adopt standard procedure for recapturing a rogue Drake. There's no hurry. He won't escape tracker range in a day, even if he flies non-stop.
Kirby straightened.
Only you reminded him to remove the Drake's tracker. After all, he's already done it to his own suit. You have to react faster.
The Drake trackers can only be removed by a local surgical procedure. Max doesn't have the tools to do it. And the delay is your fault. If you hadn't bulldozed through your request for a tail down, then Lavaflow, who are on standby, would be on the runway already.
Kirby stared back down the flight deck, where the tail was almost down, when both their peepalms bleeped and vibrated simultaneously. Both men snapped out their screens and looked at each other.
The blame game begins,
said Muller.
Remember, I know the truth.
You're about to learn how powerless you are. There'll be no life for you beyond this behemoth if you don't back me up.
Meaning?
Meaning my friends are way more powerful than yours. I told you to think ahead, about after the war, and going up against me is a dangerous error.
Muller drained his coffee and set the cup down.
Don't threaten me, Robert. You really don't have the intellect. Meanwhile, I don't think Avery and Solomon want to be kept waiting. Shall we?
Max's excitement quickly gave way to a more sober assessment of their situation. He was tired and had a headache building from the effort of keeping the stream of imagery going. Martha was beyond exhausted. Her fuel ducts were dry, she was hungry, and she shuddered with every beat of her wings. Max kept them flying due north for as long as he could, trying to work out how long it would be before he was pursued, and so how long he could afford to be on the ground conducting minor surgery. No time at all, really. Below them, the deep trough gouged out by the hog's tail looked ideal. Max tipped his hands out slightly and straightened his legs. Martha landed in the trench, rear legs almost buckling. She slewed to a stop, kicking up clouds of sand, and came to an upright rest, rocking on her haunches.
"Sorry, Princess, but there's something we've got to do before we go and hide where we can get some rest."
Martha almost purred. Max triggered the pouch release and clambered out. His limbs were shaking, and his normally controlled slide down Martha's body became a fall. He crumpled onto the packed sand, heaving in each breath like it might be his last.
"Whoa!"
Max dragged himself to a hunched sitting position. His body dripped with secretions, and his hands trembled. He shook with fatigue, and even the thought of dragging his suit off to get at the scalpel was an effort too far. His head was pounding, and he was still concentrating on sending a sense of freedom and open skies to Martha, the thoughts fading slowly and unwillingly. He dropped his hands to find Martha's head very close, and her eyes staring down the beautiful lines of her muzzle into his.
"Sorry, Princess. Just need a moment here."
Martha fired a foul lungful of stale air into his face. In addition to the obvious irritation, he could sense hunger too.
"Point taken."
Max leaned on the top of her muzzle and pushed himself to his feet, as Martha shook her head, almost knocking him back onto the floor. The sun was only halfway into its climb, but it was already a crushingly hot day, and the cooling effects of Martha's secretions were short-lived. The walls of the trough the hog's tail dug were taller than Max. He stared south, as if straining to the limits of his vision would allow him to see her as a speck in the distance. There was no dust cloud on the horizon, indicating that she hadn't moved. Max scrambled up the side of the trough to be greeted with a view of endless desert in every direction. There were no meaningful features, just rolling, wind-blown dunes, scraps of vegetation, and an ocean of silent beauty.
"Well, that clears up where we are, exactly."
Max slid back down,
and for the first time the disconnection between his life and the world through which he travelled was obvious. It was an uncomfortable sensation. The heart of granite was a windowless cocoon, a mobile hive with its grunts and pilots as its drones. They saw what they were told to see, flew where they were ordered to fly, and were encouraged not to ask questions. It presented Max with problems. He had to keep out of the way of the hog, the iron claw, and the steelback, and had only his own rough calculations to give him safe corridors for flying. Worse, the landscape offered precious few opportunities to hide, and that made the inevitable search for him far simpler. He wondered what Valera would do, what she'd say to him. The thought of his skipper triggered an uncomfortable slew of emotions. Max gazed up into the sky. He craved to be there, but not alone, not without the radio chatter, the comfort of the squad around him and Kalani a wingspan away. With what he knew about the fall, he could really help her now. But not from out here. Max cleared his throat and switched his attention south along the trough. If he strained hard, he imagined he could hear laughter in the squadron, and his arms around Annabeth. Max shook his head. Perhaps I should just go back and throw myself on Commander Avery's mercy. He felt a rough-edged jab in his back and turned around. Martha's nostrils flared. She must have guessed what he was thinking. They stared at each other for a moment. Then she moved her head, turning it to the right and tipping it up to expose the soft skin at the base of her ear slit, beneath which sat the tracker. "You're not supposed to know it's there, are you?" In response, Martha spat a tiny ball of flame into the sand, where it fused a few square centimetres to glass. Well, when it cooled it would be. Sort of. Max frowned and began shrugging off his suit so he could get at the scalpel tucked against his left thigh. Pulling his weary arms from the suit and pushing it over his torso required a far greater effort than it should have, and Max felt another twinge of anxiety. Kirby had done a number on them both, and neither had the strength for much more. Max pulled the scalpel from its resting place. It had cut his thigh, of course, but nothing serious. He gripped the blade the way he'd seen surgeons do on the medical shows, his hands trembling slightly, and placed the tip on Martha's body, stretching the scales away from the incision point with his other hand. Her scales felt dry, having nothing of the slight oiliness of healthy lubrication. Across her body they ranged from dinner-plate-sized irregular pentagons to the thumb-sized teardrop shapes beneath her ear slits. There was an artistry to how they meshed and moved, combining maximum protection with great flexibility. Max felt like he was about to commit a crime. "This won't hurt a bit," he said. Max took a breath and pushed. The blade cut easily into the small section of scale-free flesh. Martha rattled phlegm in her throat, but didn't react otherwise. However, Max was treated to a sharp pain below his left ear that made him wince. "Very funny." Max cut a slit big enough to accommodate his thumb and forefinger, then laid the scalpel on the sand. He pushed into the fat below the skin, feeling the edges of the diminutive bioplastic chip almost immediately. Flesh had grown around it in places, and an experimental tug proved fruitless. "More slice and dice, Martha," he said. He picked up the scalpel again and widened the incision a little. Martha rumbled, and Max made some ineffectual soothing noises. He found the chip with thumb and forefinger again, then began to edge the flesh away from the chip, gritting his teeth at every scrape and jerky movement. "Sorry," he said. "Nearly..." He was treated to more prickly sensations under his ear and prayed he didn't do Martha any more serious damage. He gave the chip another tug, feeling it give but for the back right corner. He slipped the scalpel in once more. The chip came free, and he found himself sitting on his backside in the sand, Martha's baleful gaze upon him. Max slapped her muzzle playfully. "Here, take it out on this." He tossed the chip on the ground, where Martha stared at it for a second, then dripped fire on it, melting it to a puddle. No more tracker data, no more Drake cam feeds either. Max felt a momentary smugness. "Bye-bye, Kirby," said Max. He rubbed the top of Martha's head and scratched her under the chin when she displayed it for him. "What now, eh?" he said, though the answer was as glaring as the sun. Move on, stay under the radar, and find a place to rest. What could be simpler? Solomon's quarters contained a small meeting room with a wooden table big enough for six. Three walls hung with schematics of Behemoths designed for desert, ice and rainforest, and a fourth dominated by a big screen. Muller found himself staring at them a good deal, in an effort not to enjoy Kirby's discomfort too much. After all, it would be his turn soon enough. What concerned him most was that Avery had so far said nothing at all. That was never, ever a good sign.
"Thank you for your version of events,"
said Solomon, in the wake of Kirby's report.
"You clearly have quite a talent for fiction."
What little colour remaining in Kirby's face drained away.
"I assure you this is wholly accurate."
"I asked you to perform two tasks," snapped Solomon. "They weren't hard. I didn't ask you to perform a solo takedown of the Maputo armed only with a box cutter, did I?" "No. I asked you to keep one pilot in the most secure medical unit on this Behemoth, and to ensure his Drake's digestive tract was emptied and remained that way. So you'll understand I'm a little taken aback that you failed in both."
"He had help," said Kirby, weakly.
Solomon stared at him.
"Did you use that all by yourself, did you? Most popular pilot, unjustly imprisoned. I mean, what were the chances, eh?" "Of course he had help. And why isn't every possible suspect already in the brig being questioned? Why is that sly bitch Orin still in her rack?"
"Because she had nothing to do with Halloran's escape," said Muller, immediately wishing he'd kept quiet.
"Oh, really? I'm in the company of not one, but two master detectives, am I? Enlighten me, Sherlock. No, you're more Costa Khan. He can be Sherlock. How did you reach that astounding conclusion?"
"Orin and her squad were confined to quarters the entire time, as ordered by the XO."
"Like that makes one turd of difference."
"Plus, I know her, and you don't,"
said Muller, evenly.
"Oh, really? And what do you think we'd find if we pulled their encrypted comms, eh?"
said Solomon.
"Here's what will happen. Pull in anyone who had contact with Halloran, anyone with anything to gain from his escape. Get pressure on that upstart who fed the Drake, because I want to know who told her to do it. When we're done with staff, I'll be sending people into the flesh tunnels."
Muller hissed in a breath.
"Problem?"
snapped Solomon.
"Mom, we need the blemmers, however fucked up that is."
"But, and I get the irony, they're not above the law. A crime has been committed here, and we will find and punish the perpetrators. Do I make myself clear?" "Good. Next, Nicola, since I can't trust either of these two to tie their fucking shoelaces, you will lead the search and recapture of Hal X. Presumably you already have resources committed. How long until you have him back here?"
Commander Avery finished tapping on her peep-arm before leaning back in her chair. Muller could feel Solomon's temperature rise.
"We will remain on station as per the current published schedule. A standard grid search has been authorized, and given the Drake tracker location, we anticipate a successful outcome today. If not, we will pass the search on to the support forces behind us and move on. Should Halloran or his Drake remain missing for 3 days, they will be recorded as lost, presumed deceased. As you are aware, our attack on the Maputo must take place within the next 2 days, or the window will close." "That is entirely unacceptable," said Solomon. "This Behemoth goes nowhere until we have Halloran back on board."
Muller cleared his throat, half expecting a frost to form on his breath, so cold had the room become.
"This is my Behemoth," said Avery quietly, "and I have orders to fulfill. I am changing those orders." "With all due respect, ma'am, you may not do that without first consulting the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Three smart asses in the room, just what I need. I will have their confirmation of those orders by dusk. This Behemoth will not move."
Avery shrugged.
As you wish. Then, for the record, and I will send all necessary supporting data to the Joint Chiefs, in my opinion, the Heart of Granite will be unable to fulfill her primary mission parameters due to the imminent failure